Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Democratic Party against La Follette. Any change in positions on this Democratic Party case, would you?
There was a majority for that Centurion, but then four people thought about it. Yeah.
I think it
was. And probably that's going to happen. We stayed the Wisconsin judgment.
I was the fifth vote. Mr. Eastman, I think you may proceed when you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. The facts in this case, are relatively simple. Under the Wisconsin primary election statute, a voter may vote in the presidential preference primary of any party he or she chooses, without regard to the voter's affiliation or any declaration of support for the party. The Democratic Party, in contrast, has for years believed that only Democrats should participate in the process of selecting its candidates. Over the years, since the party reform effort began in 1968, the party has developed a rule implementing that principle. The rule provides that only publicly declared Democrats may participate in the processes of selecting the Democratic nominee. And that is true whether those processes are a primary, a caucus, or a convention system.
Mr. Eastman, I take it we have to deal here with the Article 2, Section 1 provision. Each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof shall direct a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled. What if the Wisconsin legislature had simply provided that 13 or 14 people should be the electors to the Electoral College in December 1980 in Washington in this particular election?
I think I don't believe they could do that, but I believe
why don't you believe they can do
that? Well, I think, Mr. Justice Rehnquist, the question is not who the electors would be in the Electoral College. The question is who will be the delegates to the Democratic National Convention. Now, there's a slight difference of opinion, or at least difference of emphasis, between the two appellees as to what exactly is the state's authority to enact a statute regulating the primaries of major political parties, that is, the process by which delegates to the National Convention are chosen. Not be Article 2.
The statute speaks in terms of a point, not regulate the selection of. What if the state just decided to dispense with any sort of intervening elections or caucuses or anything else and said, we hereby appoint John Doe, Richard Roe, etc., as Wisconsin's electors to the Electoral College in December 1980?
Well, I have a sense that there are a number of decisions of this court that would probably preclude that. It might well be a denial of a federal right to vote.
Well, so far as the Constitution goes, the state could do precisely that, couldn't it?
I think as far as the Constitution's literal language, that's correct.
Be completely oblivious to the Republican and Democratic conventions and to their nominees.
That might be possible, Mr. Justice Stewart. I don't think it's
goes,
that's correct.
The state hasn't done anything like that, has it?
Well, I think that's correct, absolutely. It's not the case here. The fact of the matter is the state has enacted primary election statutes, and whether it's done so pursuant to its Article II power or whether its enactment of primary statutes is pursuant to some other power, the fact of the matter is now that it's legislated, it can only act within the confines of the Bill of Rights.
Well, for purposes of your case, you can concede that the state could do what Mr. Justice Rehnquist has suggested, but that they haven't tried that route.
I thought I did, Mr. Chief Justice, I have a reluctance almost as an academic matter to concede that, but it's not relevant, I think, is the point I was trying to make. The fact of the matter is the state has enacted primary election statutes. The Supreme Court of Wisconsin has interpreted those primary election statutes, that primary election statute, as precluding the Democratic Party from seating delegates, any delegates other than those who comply with the primary election statute. So, yes, I could well concede that. It's simply not a
so certainly an act of the Wisconsin legislature that just named certain electors would likewise have all the objections to which you posed the Wisconsin open primary law, would it not?
I don't think it would, Mr. Justice Rehnquist, because it wouldn't be dictating to the Democratic Party how it conducted its convention and which delegates it selected. It may raise other issues and other problems, but
it would be dictating to both parties, in effect.
It wouldn't be dictating how they selected their nominees, because as far as Wisconsin nominees were selected, as far as the state of Wisconsin was concerned, the nominations of the major parties would be irrelevant under your hypothesis.
Mr. Eastman, how many states do you know have open primaries today?
There are only two, Mr. Justice Blackmun, the state of Wisconsin and the state of Michigan. Now, the state of Montana has come before the court as an amicus and claimed that it has an open primary. I must say I don't read the statute that way, and they cited no authority that indicated that they do have an open primary. They have an open primary, but it's not binding on the delegates. And because of that, it's really not that primary statute wouldn't be affected by this case.
But is your proposal, what does your proposal involve? Someone declares his party affiliation as he comes into the polling place. Is that sufficient?
That's sufficient under the national rule. The national rule, Rule 2A, requires a public declaration.
And then what
of
do you
affiliation.
Do? Hand him a Democratic ballot or a Republican or whatever it is that he declares?
The details of voting are left to the state party and to state law, and it varies from state to state. In some states, the voter is handed a Democratic ballot. In some states, he goes into the voting booth and makes his selection after having made the declaration outside the voting booth.
So that he can cross over
No.
If it's machine voting, he might cross over after he gets into the cubicle.
No, the state party would have to make arrangements to ensure that he had made his declaration and voted.
Arrangements such as separate voting machines for each party?
Separate voting machines or blocking off the Republican and independent lines of whatever third party.
As each voter comes in.
That's correct. But again, the details of implementing the party rule are not dictated by the national party. Those are left to the state political parties.
No, but you're making substantial detail. And I've lived through a couple of these things. My home state used to have an open primary. I'm surprised you didn't name it. I thought they still did, but maybe not. And both machines and otherwise. And it's a lot simpler with an open primary than it is with a closed one.
It's simpler, but there are numerous states that have closed primaries. 29 states in the District of Columbia have closed primaries, and
Well, that's on the theory that the primary was a substitute for the party convention historically, is it not?
I think that's generally the correct history.
That it's a quasi-private or a quasi-public. It isn't like an election in that sense.
That's correct, Mr. Chief Justice. The end of the exercise is not the election of a public official. The end of the exercise is the selection of delegates to the National Convention who are committed to vote for particular nominees.
Mr. Eastman, do you contend the Wisconsin statute is unconstitutional, or merely that the National Party need not select seat delegates elected pursuant to the Wisconsin statute?
Mr. Justice Stevens, I think the latter is closer to our position. In other
words, what I understand it to be, and if so, is it a proper appeal?
I think it's a proper appeal because the Wisconsin statute, as applied by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and I think the Wisconsin Supreme Court's order is faithful to the statute's requirements, not the opinion, but the order.
I see.
I think that the statute as applied to the Democratic Party is unconstitutional.
We'll resume there at 1 o'clock, counsel. You may continue.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, the order of the Wisconsin court effectively requires the party to seat delegates chosen in accordance with the open primary statute and in conflict with the party's determination about who ought to participate in its processes. This is not a case where the Wisconsin statute or the court's order says to the party, if you want to use our electoral machinery, our election machinery, you must permit non-Democrats to participate in the primary process. It is a case instead where the state is attempting to dictate to the party and to the party's convention which delegates it has to seat.
What do you think the Supreme Court of Wisconsin would have done had the National Party failed to comply? Would they have held the people in contempt?
I believe so. The Wisconsin court order actually is a declaration. The Attorney General of Wisconsin had already taken steps to obtain an injunction in New York, where the convention was held, had that been necessary. So, yes, I think they would have probably held the National Party and the Democratic National Committee were respondents in the original action in the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and I presume would have been held in contempt had the Democratic Party violated the order.
Mr. Eastman, may I pursue that subject a moment? If this litigation had never been brought, I suppose the situation when the convention arrived would have been much as it was in fact, because the order was stayed, if I remember correctly.
That's correct.
And the National Committee went ahead and seated the delegates anyway.
It did so, Justice Stevens.
Does the National Committee really have much interest then in the issue? I understand they want to be out free of an order compelling them to seat them, but supposing the litigation had never been brought, presumably they would have just gone ahead and seated the delegates.
I don't think that's correct, Justice Stevens. Had the litigation ever been brought, I believe that the National Party would have run an alternate delegate selection system, or hopefully with the cooperation of the state party, and a different slate of delegates would have been seated. The National Party, at the time the stay was issued, was unfortunately and regrettably not in a position to run an alternate delegate selection system, partly because there wasn't sufficient time and partly because the DNC didn't have the resources to do it.
You don't contend there's anything unconstitutional about the Wisconsin statute, do you?
We contend that the Wisconsin statute is unconstitutional.
Well, if you're ordered to comply with it. But suppose that if you're ordered to comply with it, we covered that before lunch. That's unconstitutional under your view. But supposing they just have a statute and say, we're going to elect people in this fashion and the National Committee can take our delegates or leave them as it chooses.
There would be nothing unconstitutional about that sort of statute.
Tell me why the case isn't moot then. I thought your claim was that you wanted to be free, the party wanted to be free from this kind of a statute, or from this state effort to throw primaries open to possible members of the other party.
The case is not moot, Justice White, because, one, the Wisconsin order was not limited to the 1980 convention. The order has continuing effect and would continue to require the Democratic Party and the 1984 convention to seat delegates selected in accordance with the open primary.
Oh, I see.
Where
and
is the
party
order, rules, Mr. Eastman?
Sir?
Do you know where the order is?
Yes, the order is in the appendix to the jurisdictional statement at page 42A.
Thank you.
What color?
Blue. Blue. And thick. It's the thick blue.
42A?
Yes.
But not over 30 pages.
It's the appendix to the jurisdiction.
Mr. Eastman, isn't it a little unseemly that the state party of your own party is on the other side of the council table here?
As you know, the Democratic Party is not always of one mind on many of the issues that it confronts.
I suppose that's the only obvious answer to give.
Not a monolith, in other words.
It is not a monolith, for good or for ill.
But it does demonstrate that they're content with the Wisconsin statute and system.
The state party is content with the system. The national party, however, is a national association made up of the state parties of 50 states and recognized entities from other jurisdictions. And that really goes, in a way, to the heart of the problem in this case and in Cousins versus Lakota, and that is that the national party wishes to have national standards that apply to its processes for selecting a nominee. It has numerous standards.
Are they open to the risk that the national convention might decline to seat the delegation so selected?
There is that risk, Mr. Chief Justice, and it has happened on occasion. But I assume there is the risk that the National Convention might refuse to abide by the rules that the National Party had set earlier for the selection of the delegates. I assume that's your question. Indeed, that happened in O'Brien versus Brown in California. But that's a very rare case indeed. We don't anticipate it happening.
Were it very rare for delegates not to be seated?
It's rare for delegates not to be seated when the selection process otherwise complied with all the national party's rules for selecting the delegates.
Well, if you're not attacking the statute on its face, so to speak, why isn't this case moot?
The case is not moot because the Wisconsin court's order, which I think faithfully reflects the Wisconsin statute as applied to the Democratic Party, continues to require the Democratic Party to seat delegates from Wisconsin that are selected in part by non-Democrats.
Well, it just says the presidential preference primary. To the Democratic National.
You mean that's all primaries from here on?
I interpret that as being generic, and in any event, as I said, the order itself is consistent with the Wisconsin statute, which requires the national
party. I don't know why you back off from saying your claim is it the statute that the open primary is unconstitutional.
I didn't. If I appeared to back off, but I didn't mean to, Mr. Justice White.
I thought you just said that except for this order, there's nothing wrong with an open primary statute.
I hope I didn't say that. What I said there's nothing wrong with an open primary statute as applied to another political party, specifically, for example, the Republican Party, which has no objection to an open primary.
So you're saying this statute is unconstitutional in the face of a contrary party rule?
Exactly.
Well, why can't the Democrats simply set up their own machinery for choosing delegates in Wisconsin, and outside of the state system, and in full compliance with the national Democratic standards, and send them to the Democratic National Committee then?
Justice Rehnquist, the Wisconsin court did not leave us that option. The Wisconsin court effectively directs the party to seat delegates selected in accordance with the open primary and not by some other process. Now, the order stated as if it were a negative order, but the net effect of it is that it requires the party to seat precisely those delegates.
You say the Wisconsin court has no jurisdiction whatever to tell the Democratic Party what standards should be followed for seating delegates to its convention.
And the state has no power.
The state has no power because if it tries to do so, it violates the party's First and 14th Amendment rights.
And yet, it's made the final order here, though. It's a court which has made the final order.
And yet, you concede that the state legislature, under the Constitution, can specify who the delegates to who the electors may be.
That's quite different.
I believe that's quite different, Justice Rehnquist. Even if the state had specified the electors, that does not mean that the state could nonetheless specify the delegates to the national party's convention, because even if Wisconsin chose that scheme, the national party would still hold a convention to produce a nominee to run for president of the entire United States, and those delegates, the delegates from Wisconsin, would still reflect a set of rules for selecting delegates that was inconsistent with the party's rule.
I take it your position must be that the state of Wisconsin, through its courts or legislature, has no more authority to tell the Democratic Party which delegates should be seated than they would with the Moose Lodge or the Knights of Columbus.
Exactly. That's correct, Mr. Chief Justice.
Well, then are you saying that the Democrat National Committee's action in various aspects is not, quote, state action, close quote?
The question of whether and under what circumstances the Democratic Party's action is state action is not presented by the case, Mr. Justice Rehnquist.
But in answer to the Chief Justice's question, you say it's just like the Moose Lodge or the Knights of Columbus, which clearly are private organizations. Are you saying that the Democratic National Committee is a private organization in the same sense?
I think it is a private organization, but this case is much different from the Moose Lodge case. Well, this is not a case
where... The point
where
is that the state can't tell the Moose Lodge who to take as its members.
That's correct.
State action.
That's
that
correct.
Was the Chief Justice's question.
Yes, I understand that, Justice Stewart, and that's what I'm saying is this is... That's exactly...
We had a case here in this court, and one of the parties to whom... of which was Moose Lodge, but that's quite different. And the
that's
question
right.
there was whether the action of that organization was state action. That's quite a different...
In all of this, I think you'll put a little caveat and take a look at U.S. against Classic when you say private primaries.
That's right, Justice Marshall. This is not a case. That's right. This is not a case that involves the question whether the party's rules violate an individual's constitutional rights or whether the party is exercising some authority outside the confines of the Bill of Rights. That's a different case. It's not this one. The case here is what the state's power is with regard to the party, not what the party's is with regard to some individual.
But if the party is a purely private organization, then there are an awful lot of constitutional provisions that don't apply to it and very few that do.
The question whether a national political party is purely a private institution is one that I do not think has to be answered here, and it involves questions that this court has not really answered in similar cases. The question whether the party is purely private or in some sense it exercises state action simply isn't presented, as it was not presented in Cousins versus Lakota, and the court and the concurrence, the majority opinion and the concurrence specifically noted that.
Mr. Eastman, I think you've answered a question I asked you in two different ways, and I want to be sure I get your considered answer. I understand your argument that the Wisconsin Supreme Court may not compel the National Party to accept the delegates elected pursuant to an open primary. But assume that we vacated that judgment and just left the statute standing and then left the matter so that you could either take them or leave them, depending on your own rules. Would you then have any objection to the constitutionality of a Wisconsin statute which authorizes, says if we're going to elect delegates, we're going to do it with an open primary?
We would have no objection to a Wisconsin statute
to this
that
Wisconsin.
did not bind the Democratic
exactly.
Party to accept delegates selected in
so
a manner
the
that
So the statute is not unconstitutional on its face, but rather merely as applied to compel you to accept their people who win
yes,
their
Justice.
I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Very well. Mr. Attorney General.
Mr. Chief Justice and members of the court, at the outset, I want to make a correction on the factual circumstances concerning the Montana presidential primary. This is contained in the amicus brief of the state of Montana and the state of Washington on page 3, I believe it is. There, the procedure for the Montana primary is set forth, and under Montana law, each political party has the right to choose its method for selection of delegates. And under that law in 1980, the Democratic Party of Montana chose to select its delegates through the open primary. And as stated there, that's a policy which also violates the rules of the Democratic National Committee. So Wisconsin is not the only the only state that is subject to the rule of in conflict with state law in this case. I will address the impact of the party rule upon the state electoral and political process. Wisconsin voter surveys indicate that the largest block of party identifiers in Wisconsin, as well as in most states of the country, identify themselves as political independents. At stake here is the impact of the rule upon independents, Republicans, minor party adherents, and others who value their privacy. What are their rights under the party rule? They're absolutely none. On the other hand, under the authority of Article 2, Section 1, Wisconsin law recognizes and protects their rights to participate in the candidate selection process leading to the election of the highest office in the land. And it protects those rights to participate in a free and open manner without a declaration of party loyalty as a condition of exercising the basic right of all, which this court has held to be the root of all basic rights, the right to vote. What are the interests that the Wisconsin open primary serves? It's important to note that the direct primary, Wisconsin being the first state to enact such a law in 1905, was a reform effort to cleanse the political process, which up to that time had been dominated by special interests who controlled the selection of candidates through the political caucuses. These privacy interests are eloquently stated by the amicus brief of Washington and Montana and the brief of Editor Marinus. I won't go into them here. This interest broadly serves the expansion of the franchise. It encourages voting, and it works. Wisconsin has been in the top three of voter participation turnout in the presidential elections in this past decade.
Primaries and general election both?
That is correct, Your Honor. No case thus far decided by this court has struck down a law which expanded the franchise to too many people, and there is no reasonable justification by the appellant to do so now. Our system.
Can I ask you just one sort of basic question? Assume we agree completely with you that it's perfectly proper for the state to have an open primary form of election, and that all the reasons you advance are valid. What is there in the Constitution that requires the national convention to accept delegates elected in a manner that doesn't comply with their rules?
This court has recognized that states asserting authority under Article 2 of the Constitution have wide interest in regulating the conduct of primary elections and determining the qualification of voters in order to protect the integrity of the electoral process. Storer v. Brown, and most recently Marcheriello, are relevant on this point. And of course we must remember, and I think it's important to distinguish the types of political activities that a party convention engages in. Number one, it's obviously the most important process we call the public function, and that is the gathering together of individuals in a political convention to select one of the two candidates who ultimately will become President of the United States. This process, we contend, is part of the overall electoral process, which states...
It's no part of the constitutional electoral process.
It is no part of the constitutional electoral process. The party also gathers together in convention to conduct many other kinds of activities. It writes a platform. It establishes rules. It does many things that govern the internal or intra-party affairs of the convention. And we contend that this distinction must be given great weight by this court in permitting states to establish voter qualifications for citizens within their borders.
Has it been known, Mr. Attorney General, or at least has it been thought and said, that sometimes the opposing political party will enter the primary, if an open primary is available, for the purpose of confusing and embarrassing the opposition?
Your Honor, the record which has been stipulated here contains all of the relevant studies and scholarly articles which relate to that question, and they all conclude that there is no evidence of raiding in this case. And in fact, their own document, the Winograd Commission, concludes that the whether or not the Wisconsin law has experienced raiding is merely speculation.
But what you're saying then is that the Democratic National Convention meeting off in Memphis, Tennessee, or in New York cannot have a different view of the matter.
Not when important constitutional concerns of that are properly rested
what
the
is
authority
the,
of the state.
What is the constitutional concern in a primary?
To maintain the integrity of the electoral process, Marcheriello recognized that the important role that the parties play in the selection of national and state candidates grants significant authority in the states to regulate those elections in terms of all of the regulations that election laws presume, voter qualifications, in order to ensure the integrity of that process. That is the constitutional principle that we believe is enunciated in a long line of cases relating to the right to vote.
Mr. Attorney General, isn't the real problem here that Wisconsin is extending its long arm into the convention in another state?
I'd like to address that question, Your Honor. Yes, I believe that's...
Take the Cousins case while you do it, will you?
Right, I certainly will. I believe that that's a very important issue. The question of the extent and whether or not the Wisconsin order has chosen the narrowest means possible to effectuate its purpose. First of all, let's examine the form of the injunction in Cousins. In Cousins, there was a state court injunction which was issued against named individuals, which forbade them from directly associating with a political convention which they wanted to associate with and which wanted them to come in and be delegates. And a criminal contempt process was pending at the time that these issues came before this court, having, of course, been stayed and by the lower courts. The issue involved in that case involved the affirmative action rules of the party as far as slate making, as far as age, race, sex. Those kinds of qualifications were at issue in that case. And there was an intervention by a state court telling the party and the delegates who were chosen by private caucuses pursuant to party rules that met all of these qualifications, that those folks couldn't go to the Democratic National Convention as delegates because these other folks were elected under state law and state law prevails. Now, as far as voting qualifications, there's one thing that hasn't been said yet, and that is that under Wisconsin direct open primary, we vote for candidates. We vote for president. We vote for the names on the ballot in the Wisconsin Democratic Party are the party candidates for president. We are not talking about a process under state law which selects the delegates. Under the state law, the delegates are selected after the primary is over with by the state party. Under state law, they must be party members. They must be, they must take, the only issue that the party has is that they must take a pledge under state law to vote in accordance with the apportionment that of the results of the primary election. That is the only thing that the party disagrees with. Otherwise, these folks comply with state law, they're chosen by the party, and the only interference by this Wisconsin court order, which is the narrowest that could possibly be drawn in order to effectuate the purpose of the primary, which is to guarantee the vote of those people that went into the privacy of their voting booth and voted for those particular candidates. And we feel that Cousins is not applicable here. And in fact, we would draw your attention to Buckley versus Vallejo, which is, we feel, much more in point as far as the constitutional issues that are involved in this case, where this court recognized that in the question of disclosure of campaign contributions, that public disclosure of contributions to candidates and political parties will deter some individuals who otherwise might contribute. In some instances, disclosure may even expose those contributors to harassment, retaliation. That's U.S. 424 U.S. at 68. We feel that the minimum intrusion by the court order in the court below does not rise to the test that this court has applied that is necessary, that the appellants here have the burden to show that they have been substantially interfered with in their associational rights.
And the fact I don't believe, General LaValle, that it appears in the record, but wasn't one of the great battles after the English Reform Acts of the 19th century where they had enfranchised people to obtain a secret ballot because the landlord simply stood at the polling place, and if the person had to declare himself openly and orally, it was just about like being disenfranchised.
It is a matter of disenfranchisement. And I would also point out the Wisconsin open primary is held in conjunction with the spring election on the same day in Wisconsin, in which literally thousands of our locally elected officials, our judiciary, our mayors, our city councilmen, our town board members are all elected on the same day in a nonpartisan election. And to require the state to change its law and force people who want to vote in these elections to declare their party allegiance would certainly frustrate the very substantial purpose in Wisconsin's electoral process.
General LaFollette, your opponent says they're not going to require you to change the law. They simply won't seat your delegates.
Well, we contend that they do not have the power to refuse. They must meet the burden that this court has laid down in claiming infringement of constitutional rights, that they must be substantial.
Then you admit that Wisconsin is controlling the Democratic convention being held in Timbuktu. You admit
I would say we have the right, yes, we have the right to do that, as far as our law is concerned. Thank you.
Very well. Mr. Fribert.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Robert Fribert, and I represent the state party in this action. Mr. Justice Stewart, I think, asked one of the critical questions, and that is whether this election is a part of the constitutional electoral process. It is. It's the beginning of the electoral process by which states nominate and elect electors who elect the President of the United States.
Well, now the choosing of electors is in the Constitution, but there's nothing in there about political parties.
Well, it's up to the states to determine
to
how
to choose their electors.
To choose their electors.
Yes.
And in Wisconsin, it's a very complex process. It's a complex process throughout the country. It starts with, in Wisconsin, primaries, which in Wisconsin has decided that every citizen should have an opportunity at least once every 4 years to determine who they want to be president of the United States, and not wait until November when the choices are narrowed by the national parties. And so that's the beginning of the process, which culminates in the national party having automatic ballot access in Wisconsin just by having the results of their nominating convention is automatically on the ballot with the party name listed.
What about the states which begin this process at the precinct level with caucuses? Would you say the precinct caucus process is part of the constitutional electoral process?
Yes, I would say that, absolutely.
So that the state could regulate that the caucuses must take place between 7 o'clock and 10 o'clock in a home on the main street or something of that kind?
The national party is regulated as to when the these primaries take place. I think that what is being missed here...
I'm now talking about the caucuses. The state legislature, you say, may regulate the caucus.
It may, to a point. It can regulate it to achieve a certain state fundamental interest. For example, I think it could regulate the caucus to make sure that blacks and other minorities are not interfered with in their right to associate, and that has been long held in United States versus Classic. Once it's conceded that we have a public
Classic
infusion...
Classic did not involve a Negro.
Well, I think when
Classic
we...
Classic did not involve a Negro.
Pardon? Classic?
U.S. against Classic did not involve a Negro.
Well, the white primary cases, and as a generic statement, did involve blacks. The point is that when we have a decision like Moose Lodge from the court, we have, I believe, a statement from the court that in order for any of the 14th, 15th Amendment grants to be applicable, you must have a finding that the particular activity involved constitutes public action. And I think that that's very clear by the decisions of this court, and especially footnote 16 in Buckley versus Vallejo, that at this point in our history, it is beyond doubt that primary contests, party primary contests, are elections, and that they can be heavily regulated because there is a public action that is taking place, and that there would be a certain amount of retreat from that if we could say that this reform measure at the turn of the century from Wisconsin, which outlawed the very thing that the National Party wanted to superimpose in Wisconsin, the very thing that was done in Michigan. In Michigan, the Attorney General declared that their open primary statute was unconstitutional, and the whole process was displaced with a party caucus where there were fees to be paid, and as a result, only 15,000 people determined the delegates from the state of Michigan. It seems to me that that is not the way this country has gone, and that it's not the direction that it should go, that it's a step back, that a reform measure to increase voter participation in an election process has been viewed, as in Buckley, with great favor. And in this context, we're not talking about the seating of delegates. The Wisconsin statute couldn't care less who are the delegates. The only thing that it is focused upon is the apportionment process by which the will of the voters at the primary becomes effective. And that's the reason the injunction was entered. It is very narrow in scope. Beyond that, on all of the other party business, the Wisconsin statute couldn't care less.
But if you say that, Mr. Friedberg, it seems to me that you haven't explained how you justify the injunction. Let me put it this way. It seems to me one could agree with every word in Justice Abrahamson's opinion and still not quite understand the theory on which she entered the injunction.
The theory on which the injunction was entered is the basic power that a state has when it is in the regulating area of voter qualifications to make its laws effective. And in light of Cousins and the kind of meshing of times of public action by a national party and private action, it should be done in the least offensive manner. To make the law effective. If the citizens of Wisconsin have a constitutional right, as created by the legislature of Wisconsin, to vote in these primaries, then the law can be made effective in a way which doesn't impair the associational interests of the national party. And I think that that's what this court indicated in Rosario, for example, by saying the states can regulate, they can make their laws effective. And it's in a very, very unoffensive way that the law is made effective. Indeed,
Well, that's the issue here, isn't it, as my brother Stevens has indicated. Your state Supreme Court has said that this state law is binding on the Democratic National Committee. And when I use the word binding, I'm quoting from the injunction they ordered.
Yes.
And That is what makes the controversy here, isn't it?
Well, I think it's illusory. An illusory controversy. The National Party comes in and claims a great deprivation of the First Amendment rights without in any way demonstrating that any of their other programs for selecting delegates would have any different kind of apportionment. And I think that they have the burden in claiming a First Amendment rights violations not to speculate about just what the impact would be.
Well, I know that your court said that the impact was speculated, and therefore the case was over just on that ground.
Yes.
But it went on to say that even if it isn't, even if it were substantial, there's a state justification.
Yes.
Now, do you make that claim too?
I don't get into the state justification in my brief, she's right.
You stop short of that.
Yes, but it doesn't have to go that far because the National Party has...
The state court went that far, and if it were easier to accept that branch of its judgment than the other...
I agree, and
or do you? Or you back away from that part of it, though.
I back away because the way the state party way of presented the brief is I don't have to reach that question because of several reasons. One, if it is recognized that this is a public interest or public action activity by the National Party, then it seems to follow it can be regulated. And by definition, almost by constitutional definition, it is not a First Amendment problem. Secondly, there is no showing in the context of apportionment of delegates' strength among various contenders for president that anything would be any different if a different method were used.
Mr. Friedberg, what if the Democratic National Committee had never come into the Wisconsin courts and the Wisconsin primary had proceeded according to Wisconsin law, and then when it came time for credentials hearings or seating at the Democratic National Committee, the Democratic National Committee simply refused to seat the Wisconsin delegate. Do you think that would be permissible?
No. It's a part of the process which results in that result of that convention gets automatic ballot access. The party can't go walk down a one-way street. They love the automatic ballot access. They love having their name on the Wisconsin ballot. They love the context and the appointments that they get in Wisconsin just by virtue of being a party. And it seems to me that that intertwining is a two-way street. And I think that the two-way street is that it is private in some respects, as is stated in Cousins, and it is public in other respects, especially when we're talking about the critical franchise which is given by a state. And in federal elections, it can be further regulated by Congress if it chooses to come into the area. Is that the full extent of the National Party's position is that Wisconsin could conduct a closed primary only if they wanted a closed primary. If they wanted caucuses, they could outlaw it too. It's the full extent of their position is that these state laws only are enforced if they want them to be enforced.
When you say they, you mean the Democratic National Party?
The National Party, yes, sir.
I don't think that's a fair statement of their position. They said they're perfectly valid laws, they just won't seat your delegates.
They just won't let them be any meaning to them. They're perfectly valid, and the state of Wisconsin can go out and have an intellectual exercise.
Well, just as they did in Cousins against Wagoda. That delegation was elected pursuant to Illinois law, and they refused to seat them.
I think Cousins versus Wagoda, is not the best applicable case to this. I think it is Buckley, but Cousins had as one of its major aspects is that they were concerned there with who were the delegates, which we are not concerned with here. Here we are concerned with who are the voters, and that is a completely different question. And I think extremely important.
Well, if you're not concerned with who the delegates are, you can't possibly justify the injunction.
We care how they vote at the convention on the first ballot and beyond, and that's the only thing we care about. Nothing else. We don't care who does it. That's a private matter. I think it accommodates Cousins. But Cousins involved there was no conflict between a state law and Cousins as such and a party rule. Because
there sure was. The Illinois law provided one method of elections, and the other slate was not elected pursuant to that method.
No, the Illinois law was neutral on the process by which a delegates could be chosen. What happened there is we had an intra-party squabble between people in the Chicago area who were enforcing a slate. And that was the real underlying fight, and then they hid under the Illinois law to say, now you've got to accept our previous violation to the rule. And I think that that's what's underneath Cousins, very much what's underneath Cousins. They used the Illinois law as a refuge in an attempt to circumvent the national rules, and that's what was at stake, and therefore it is a completely different case.
Why aren't you using the Wisconsin law in an effort to circumvent the national rule in exactly the same way?
Because
you're not complying with the national rule,
it's not
so you're circumventing.
No. It's not the state party of Wisconsin, is not the Wisconsin legislature. And what we had in Illinois was a state party or a Chicago party attempting by its slate-making processes.
Which complied fully with the Illinois statute.
They did comply fully, but they didn't comply with the party
didn't
rules.
Didn't comply with the party rules. It's precisely the same situation.
Because they were slate-making. There was no juggernaut between the state party or national rules and the Illinois law, which is true here. And besides that, it was going to a different interest. In this case, we are in the interest of apportioning the will of the Wisconsin voters to the choices made in the party. That was not an issue in Illinois. Illinois does not have, and I don't believe it does, or at least not in 1976 or two, a binding primary. It was advisory only. So the Illinois...
Well, it was binding with respect to who the delegates would be.
Yes, but not the more fundamental point as to who should be president of the United States. That's a lot more important to the public than who the delegates are, it seems to me.
Did I understand you correctly to say that Wisconsin's interest was in how the delegates voted at the convention?
On the nomination process, yes.
At the convention?
Yes. In effectuating the will of the... Oh, I think it's the first step in the process by which people become president or nominees for president of the United States, and it's intertwined in the voter qualification powers that we have as a state, subject to congressional regulation in a federal election, and also under the 12th Amendment as a part of a complex process for determining electors.
Why couldn't the state interest you describe be adequately protected by a statute that said, whoever the delegates are, they shall vote, at least on the first ballot or the second ballot, for the presidential candidate who receives the largest primary vote in the primary?
That's a choice that the Wisconsin statute gives, a winner-take-all statute. The Wisconsin statute allows a winner-take-all, but the party can choose to apportion, and the party has chosen apportionment in this instance. Thank you.
Do you have anything further, Mr. Eastman?
Mr. Chief Justice, I don't feel the need to say anything further, but I'm prepared to answer questions.
Let me just ask this one question. Supposing the Wisconsin statute, divided by district, said that the presidential candidate who receives the most votes in a given delegate district, however they're apportioned, shall be the candidate for whom the delegates from Wisconsin shall vote. In other words, you could pick the delegates, but on the first ballot they've got to vote for the people that represent the majority. Would that comply with your rules?
No, it would not, so long as the primary was an open primary and non-Democrats.
So the open primary objection goes not merely to the selection of delegates, but also to the determination of the person for whom they might vote.
Absolutely, Justice Stevens. The heart of this case is the process of selecting the nominee, not merely delegates who are bound to hold their hands up and cast a predetermined vote. Although I might add, actually, the delegates' functions are mightily affected by the candidate apportionment, because the candidate gets a certain number of members on the Credentials Committee, a certain number on the Platform Committee, and a certain number on the Rules Committee.
Mr. Eastman, the Wisconsin delegation was, in fact, seated last summer, was it not?
Yes, it was, Justice. Again.
Although there was a stay of the Wisconsin Supreme Court's order, was there not?
Yes. And while the party very much appreciated being able to, the court's stay, which was issued sua sponte, and having the ability to make that decision free of the compulsion of the Wisconsin court's order, there simply wasn't enough time left, or really the resources, unfortunately, for the party to go out and run an alternate delegate selection system, the national party, without the cooperation of the state party.
So there was really no alternative. At least there was no other delegation.
There was no other delegation. It was impractical for us to try to create one.
And why isn't this moot?
It isn't moot for several reasons. First, the Wisconsin court order, as I mentioned, has continuing effect. Secondly, the issue is not only capable of repetition, it's almost virtually certain to be repeated, because I see no evidence that Wisconsin's going to change its statute. And I see very, very strong evidence that the Democratic Party is not going to change its Democrats-only rule. And furthermore, it will almost certainly evade review if the issue will almost certainly evade review if the court doesn't decide it now, because by the time the controversy arises in the nature of the process of approving delegate selection plans and so on before the convention, the controversy wouldn't really arise as it didn't this time until about 8 months before the Wisconsin primary election, which is held in April, and about a year before the convention. And as was the case this time, that simply isn't enough time to get a conclusive final adjudication of the constitutional issues that are raised here.
Mr. Eastman, would you say that the state of Wisconsin is constitutionally prohibited from legislating allowing a closed primary, as you want, the declaration of the Democratic loyalty, but saying that delegates from the fourth and votes from the fourth and fifth district shall be counted as electing so many delegates, in other words, having a congressional district apportionment?
If I understand the hypothesis to be that the issue would not be necessarily closed versus open primary,
right,
but the apportionment of delegates.
Right.
Yes, apportionment of delegates selected from the state, but actually selected to by the state party to be at the convention. Yes, I would say that the Democratic National Convention and the Democratic Party could decide on the apportionment of delegates from the state on the method of apportionment, and that if the state mandated a different one, the state could not constitutionally enforce that different allocation.
Even if the state set a portion according to the vote, and the Democratic Party said winner take all.
I think that's correct, and in fact, the Democratic Party.
It's true, but you would take the same position both ways.
Yes. Yes.
Well, the Democratic Party has rules, does it not, requiring that state delegations be representative of various, or have a certain quotas of various age groups and genders, and there being only two genders, and be racially diverse and so on, does it not?
It has guidelines that require certain affirmative action steps, and in fact, it did require this year that 50% of the delegates be women.
Yes. So that if a state law should say men only, for example, or people only over 35 or something like that, that would also, in your view, be unconstitutional because it would impair your constitutional right of free association?
So long as there was a contrary party rule, yes. Now,
and
I'm not addressing,
there is,
yes, I'm not addressing, it would be a, there may well be other constitutional constraints on the Democratic Party's choices. And that gets into a whole question that's not presented here,
right.
Whether the party's action, state action, and so forth, and whether it can, whether certain individuals can be precluded. But that's not this case.
No.
You do adhere to the view that if the Wisconsin legislature says half of the population of the state lives in the lakeshore counties and half of the population lives in the other half of the state, then half of the delegates shall be elected by the lakeshore county closed declared Democrats and half shall be elected by the other declared Democrats.
That is our view, Mr. Justice Rehnquist. And in fact, that very issue was brought up in the context of the Republican Party's allocation of its delegates in certain states in a case that was decided by the D.C. Circuit not long ago, the Ripon case, which is cited in the briefs. And the D.C. Circuit said that the state party, that the Republican Party had a right to determine its own apportionment.
It wasn't a state action.
No, it wasn't quite the same. That's right.
If this injunction order were revoked at this time, you would say there's still a case of controversy here that should be decided. If the injunction were revoked.
Because
the statute is still an operative force.
Yes. I believe the Wisconsin Supreme Court's declaration is faithful to what the statute describes.
Mr. Eastman, I suppose you'd take the same position if the Democratic Party rules said no delegate shall be seated unless his loyalty to the Democratic Party shall be certified by the state chairman.
Well, I can't imagine the Democratic Party adopting that rule. I would take the same position. It would
be the same issue.
Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Kissinger.